Hello, I'm Laura Castleton, U.S. Head of Portfolio Construction and Strategy at Janus Henderson Investors. For 90 years, we've worked to help clients achieve superior financial outcomes and fulfill our purpose of investing in a brighter future together. To learn more, go to janushenderson.com.
The January 6th committee lays out its case against former President Donald Trump in its first public hearing.
President Trump summoned the mob, assembled the mob, and lit the flame of this attack.
Plus, the U.S. and Latin American countries zero in on a migration deal and why tiny trackers could have a big effect on supply chains. It's Friday, June 10th. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. The House Select Committee investigating the January 6, 2021 attack on the U.S. Capitol held a primetime hearing last night aimed at convincing a divided nation that former President Donald Trump's claims of a stolen election incited his followers to try to interrupt the peaceful transfer of power. The hearing, which was shown on cable television and most major broadcast outlets, was the first in a series scheduled over the next 2 weeks. Backers of Trump, including most Republican lawmakers, have rejected the hearings as a political ploy by Democrats. We'll have complete analysis of the hearing with WSJ DC audio reporter Daniela Cheslow later in the show. The U.S. and Latin American countries plan to sign a non-binding migration agreement on the final day of the Summit of the Americas in Los Angeles today. The agreement would mark a shift in the approach that countries take to refugees and migrants amid unprecedented movement across the region. WSJ White House reporter Ken Thomas has more.
The framework is expected to include commitments in which more countries will host migrants and create more visa pathways to move them throughout the region legally for either work or humanitarian protection. In exchange, the U.S. would boost its economic commitment to countries with large migrant populations.
The implementation of the deal would require long-term coordination on a complex issue from a region that has become increasingly fragmented. Attendance at the summit alone became a source of controversy, as the presidents of Mexico, Guatemala, Honduras, and El Salvador boycotted the summit to protest the fact that authoritarian regimes in Cuba, Venezuela, and Nicaragua were not invited. Inflationary pressure has eased in China as COVID-19 lockdowns hammered domestic demand. Consumer inflation in the world's second-largest economy gained 2.1% from a year earlier in May, unchanged from the previous month, while the producer price index eased from 8% growth in April to 6.4% in May. The latest official data makes China a rare outlier among the world's largest economies, which continue to grapple with decades-high inflation. And in a surprise move, Walt Disney has fired top TV executive Peter Rice just months after renewing his contract, according to people familiar with the matter. He is the second top executive to be ousted from Disney in the past 6 weeks. Disney gave no reason for Rice's firing, but people familiar with the matter say CEO Bob Chapek told Rice he was no longer a good fit for the company. A spokeswoman on behalf of Rice declined to comment. In a statement Thursday, the chair of Disney's board of directors, Susan Arnold, stated the board's support for Chapek, who has been under pressure from investors, employees, and lawmakers as Disney's share price has tumbled this year and the company has become ensnared by political controversies across the country. Big changes could soon be coming to supply chains in the form of a very small piece of technology, a tracking device the size of a postage stamp developed by the Israeli company Wiliot. WSJ reporter Liz Young covers supply chain strategies for us and has been learning about these new tracking tags, and she joins us now with more. Hi, Liz.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
So could you explain this new technology for us and tell us how this compares to what has previously been on the market?
Yes. Wiliot has invented a tagging device that's about the size of a postage stamp. It can be tacked onto nearly anything they say. So for example, their first partnership, which is what it was announced this week, is with a major Israeli supermarket chain called Shufersal. Shufersal plans to put these tags onto its produce crates to track things like zucchini through the supply chain. And that is what Wiliot says has applications in the pharmaceutical sectors, has applications in the apparel sectors. The tags are Bluetooth enabled. They're battery free, so no need to charge. Wiliot says these are fairly comparable to things like RFID tags, for example, something you might see in a shirt when you buy it. But Wiliot says that their tags are a little bit smaller, a little bit cheaper, and they say that they'll be even cheaper next year.
And how could a technology like this, Liz, improve visibility across the supply chain?
So these tags will help ensure that products are tracked at every single step of the supply chain. These tags ensure that there's no gray zone as products move from the farm. For example, right now, a farm is not Wi-Fi enabled, right? So these tags being Bluetooth enabled, they'll be able to communicate location, temperature, and then later the distributors can track that and see, okay, the zucchini was at this temperature at this time. Same thing when they go onto the truck, same thing when they're in the warehouse, same thing when they're on the produce shelves. So a professor I talked to at Penn State University, Mark Capifari, says that visibility is certainly one of the major challenges of many in the supply chain right now. He says that if we had closer visibility of a product, that could support needing less warehouse personnel, less trucking personnel, things like that.
Wall Street Journal reporter Liz Young covers supply chain strategies for us. Liz, thanks for the update.
Thanks so much.
Coming up, we'll turn to D.C. and to last night's January 6th hearing on Capitol Hill with our D.C. audio reporter, Daniela Cheslow. That's after the break.
The Claude 3 model family from Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. With models at every point on the price-performance curve, you no longer have to make trade-offs between intelligence, speed, and cost. Claude 3 Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed. And Haiku is the fastest and lowest cost model on the market, perfectly designed for high volume, high speed use cases. Join the thousands of enterprises who trust Anthropic to keep them at the frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude today.
Donald Trump, the President of the United States, spurred a mob of domestic enemies of the Constitution to march down the Capitol and subvert American democracy.
That's Mississippi Democrat Benny Thompson, the chair of the House Select Committee on the January 6th Capitol riot. He's speaking during the first public hearing of the panel after a year-long investigation, and it aired in primetime last night. The panel has been interviewing more than 1,000 witnesses, and they say their testimony and video footage they've gathered make it clear that the mob that invaded the Capitol can be directly tied to former President Donald Trump. Wall Street Journal DC audio reporter Daniela Cheslow followed the hearings, and she joins us now with more. Hi, Daniela.
Hello, Luke.
So, what was the tone last night of this hearing?
It was somber. The panel's 9 members sat in a row at the hearing, and Chairman Thompson talked in broad terms about how the panel was not a political act, but rather the defense of democracy and the Constitution. And the panel's vice chair, Republican Liz Cheney of Wyoming, laid out the case. She said the people who attacked the Capitol were taking inspiration from Trump.
Those who invaded our Capitol and battled law enforcement for hours were motivated by what President Trump had told them, that the election was stolen, and that he was the rightful president. President Trump summoned the mob, assembled the mob, and lit the flame of this attack.
She said that the panel would be proving that in the weeks to come, and they started to do that last night.
Yeah, what were some key moments from the hearing?
Well, we heard video testimony from Trump's inner circle admitting that there was no fraud in the election, including his former Attorney General Bill Barr. Here he speaks on a video.
Repeatedly told the president in no uncertain terms that I did not see evidence of fraud and that would have affected the outcome of the election. And frankly, a year and a half later, I haven't seen anything to change my mind on that.
And we heard Ivanka Trump saying she believed Barr.
It affected my perspective. I respect Attorney General Barr. So I accepted what he was saying.
And Cheney said Trump ignored his advisors and instead pressured the Department of Justice, Vice President Mike Pence, and state officials to try to reverse the 2020 election that Joe Biden won. One new piece of information that came up is that Trump, according to the panel, never called in defenses for the Capitol.
President Trump gave no order to deploy the National Guard that day.
And this, she said, is despite Trump getting calls from Kevin McCarthy, currently the House Minority Leader, asking for help that day. Instead, Cheney said it was Mike Pence who called for reinforcements. And the former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Mark Milley, said in a video that only Pence called him to ask for help.
One witness we heard from last night was a Capitol police officer. What did she add to the picture?
Luke, this panel has assembled detailed video reconstruction of the day, and in one scene, we can see a blonde police officer trying in vain to hold back a mob, and she's using bike racks. That was Caroline Edwards. She lost consciousness that day, and when she came to, she returned to the fray. And in her testimony, she underscored the violence of the day and the effort it took to try to contain it.
I couldn't believe my eyes. There were officers on the ground. They were bleeding. They were throwing up. They were, I saw friends with blood all over their faces. I was slipping in people's blood. I was catching people as they fell. It was carnage. It was chaos.
Edwards said on the day of the attack and since, she's been called a traitor and worse, but that she was trying to do her duty. And she also described seeing her colleague Brian Sicknick go pale as a sheet, she said, after he had been struck, and he would die of two strokes a day later. His longtime partner Sandra Garza sat in the audience and cried.
And Daniela, have we heard from former President Trump and other Republicans?
Well, Trump is still banned from Twitter since the riot, but on his own media, Truth Social, Trump called the panel an unselect committee of political hacks about what he called election fraud and irregularities that took place on a massive scale. Besides Liz Cheney and Illinois Republican Adam Kinzinger, we have not seen the House Republicans cooperate with this panel at all. And in fact, in the run-up to the hearing, we saw House GOP leadership deriding the panel. They called it a sham and a witch hunt. Earlier yesterday, House Minority Leader McCarthy called the panel a smokescreen for Democrats to push their radical agenda.
Daniela, finally, it's probably too early to have a definitive answer to this, but how might these hearings have an impact? Will they?
Most major broadcast networks and cable news channels covered the hearing in whole, except for Fox News. And by the end of the session Thursday night, January 6th hearing was the third most searched topic on Google in the U.S. So that tells you people are listening, people are watching. But it's not quite clear what kind of consequences we'll see from these hearings, especially legal consequences for Trump or his advisors. The Department of Justice has charged more than 800 people involved in the riot, but they've mostly been people who were on the street and not in the White House. The current Attorney General, Merrick Garland, says he's going to watch as much of the hearings as he can, and he's promised to prosecute those involved at all levels.
That was Wall Street Journal DC audio reporter Daniela Cheslow. Daniela, thanks so much.
Thank you, Luke.
And finally, for more than 3,000 workers in the UK, the weekend has already started. They are part of a 6-month pilot project involving 70 businesses from banks to fast food restaurants that will see them working 4 days a week without a pay cut. WSJ Workplace reporter Catherine Dill says the latest experiment follows a multi-year study in Iceland.
In most cases, overall output didn't decline. In some cases, it actually improved. And most workers reported maintained or improved productivity as well as reduced stress.
Dill says that while select U.S. companies have flirted with the idea of a 4-day work week, widespread adoption could be a ways off.
A recent survey of 459 companies, mostly in tech, among those companies, 90% didn't plan to adopt a 4-day work week.
And that's What's News for Friday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Have a great weekend, and thanks for listening.
Zscaler extended its zero-trust architecture with powerful AI engines trained by 500 trillion daily signals to prevent ransomware and AI attacks that target business. Zscaler Zero Trust plus AI. Learn more at zscaler.com/zerotrustAI.